from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Road Show.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are so glad you're listening in with us.
What a great time.
Oh, man, that was fun.
What a great time. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us. We'd love for you to join the conversation. Log on to Facebook.com/The Music Row Show and chat along with us if you have questions or comments. And remember, you can always listen to past shows by clicking the podcast page on The Music Row Show. And there's a few other ways to get a hold
of
us.
Yeah, you can hit us up, of course, on Twitter, at The Music Row Show, and Instagram as well, The Music Row Show. We make it pretty easy. It's The Music Row Show everywhere.
So
there you go.
The Music Row Show.
The Music Row Show.
Okay.
Even you could figure that one out.
It's not educatedsongwriter.com?
No, but we're going to get to that.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, why don't you tell us who we have this hour?
We do. Okay, great. We've got joining us now is songwriter and producer, session musician, teacher, author, and owner of not one but two recording studios, one here in Nashville and one in Sonoma, California. Cliff Goldmacher is here with us.
Thank you guys for having me on. You make me sound, I want to meet that guy.
Yeah, me too. Well, Cliff's songs, I should just continue here. Cliff's songs have been cut by artists, wide variety of genres, everything from country to pop, even jazz and classical artists have cut his songs. As an educator, he teaches workshops for BMI and ASCAP, the Songwriters Guild of America, even NSAI, National Songwriters Association, and TACSI. And if that weren't enough, Cliff's also a freelance journalist, and he's contributed articles to magazines like EQ and Recording and Pro Sound and all kinds of other websites and stuff. So he's got a lot. We're getting a lot to talk about with him. Cliff Goldmacher, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Thank you guys very much for having me on.
Glad you're here.
Looking forward to this.
I'm sorry we're out of time now, but
yeah,
it was great having you here. Thank you very much.
You guys have a great night. I really enjoyed it.
I hope
I get to come back.
No, actually, I'm going to let our listeners know. I found out about you. I was looking at the West Coast Songwriters Association, I think. Is that the name of that?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And you had a great article about things to, you're good with numbers. Five things to do before you go into a studio. Six things to never do when you're right. But you had this great article about the mistakes people make before they go into a studio. And I called you because I was really taken aback by how great the article was. I'm going, man, I mean, he just nails all of this stuff in a real concise way, far more concise than what I'm doing here.
Clearly.
But but that leads us up to then educatedsongwriter.com. So let's plug that right away because I want people to go to this website.
Well, thanks, Scott. Yeah. This was something that sort of occurred to me after I'd been at this for a while. I realized I actually had an opinion. And it was one of those things where if you do this long enough, you start to kind of, first of all, the reason that I was able to write about the mistakes that people make before they go into the studio to demo, I made every single one of those mistakes.
Excellent.
That's part of the benefit of being at this for a while, is you just make them all yourself. And my thought behind Educated Songwriter was, maybe if I give people a heads up, maybe they won't have to make every single one of the mistakes that I did.
They probably still will.
They'll make different mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll find new ones to make. Well, you play lots of instruments. Which one came first? How hard was it to launch into others after that?
That's actually a great question. So piano came first. That was the thing that I picked up as a kid and learned classical piano and got some theory background, which I think was really helpful. But it wasn't in playing piano that I got interested in songwriting or anything. It was this guy across the hall from me my freshman year in college who had a guitar.
Uh-huh.
So piano had kind of always been there, but it wasn't until I started to play guitar that it kind of unlocked something, and that's when things got more interesting for me. So guitar came later, but it's exactly what you said. It's kind of like learning to translate. So you play one instrument, and then it's like, all right, I know music. Now, how do I do that thing on this thing?
Right. You're not starting from complete ground zero.
No, exactly. Exactly.
But I mean, what kind of learning curve is there? We did a game at Christmas called Musical Instruments where we had everybody try to play a song playing an instrument they'd never played before. And it isn't something that you can just click on. So, I mean, what's your learning curve when you're going from instrument to instrument?
Well, so from piano to guitar, I think that was a fairly steep learning curve. That took a while. Mm-hmm. But then from guitar to, say, mandolin, it was just a question of, okay, I kind of know how to make my hand do that crazy thing where it goes around the neck now.
Right.
So now I just have to learn where to put my fingers. And it was sort of similar with ukulele. Harmonica was a different animal. Harmonica is all about, I had this sort of aha moment with the harmonica where I realized, oh, so if you breathe in,
something
that's where
happens.
All the action is.
Yeah.
Because that's how you can change the shape of your mouth and do all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. So it's everything's a little bit different, but you're just kind of learning to translate. And I think the more that you do that, the easier it becomes to sort of do the next one.
Huh.
Interesting.
Okay.
Interesting.
I could be faking it.
I'm 25 years on one instrument, and I still can't figure that one out. So,
nah, you do fine.
Oh,
you
listen
do
to
fine.
You. Okay, so I know. What is this? Get a room, right?
well, we are in a hotel.
Okay, I know. Stop. Stop.
Listen to the groan that one produced. Wow.
Yeah. Okay, let's get back to songwriting. How does a songwriter find their own voice, and why is that so important?
So interesting. In hearing Frank speak earlier, he mm-hmm. talked a little bit about that sort of muscle concept, and I feel like songwriting is absolutely positively a muscle. And the more that you do it, the more that you refine the process. So there's this thing that happens when you first start writing songs where all the planets have to line up and you generally have to be falling in love right at that moment. And then maybe a song will come to you.
Right.
Right.
And
right.
so trying to count on that and be consistent that way is impossible. So it was a matter of just writing and writing and writing and writing. And somehow, just the sheer force of the repetition, you begin to sort of figure out where you're strong, where maybe a collaborator would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when I first moved to town, and I think this is like most songwriters, I was doing all of it, right? Because you write these songs because you want a girl to like you, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it got to the point where I just thought, okay, this is my process. I now write songs and this is my little song child and that's how it's going to go.
Right.
And then you move to this town and it's all about collaborating. And it wasn't until I got paired with somebody who was a really gifted melody writer that I realized just exactly how pedestrian my melodies were.
Right.
And so the trick, and I think part of this is back in answer to your question about finding your voice. I think that when you figure out where you're strong, you can then pair with other people who are strong where you aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got something.
Right.
And so over years of writing, and I'm saying it now in just a couple of minutes, but it took years and I wasn't aware of it as it was happening. But you start to become aware slowly about where you're strong, the things that come easy to you, the thing that has that little sort of bit of pixie dust on it that you can't sort of explain how it happens. And I think every writer's got that. And the question is, can you identify it?
Mm-hmm.
And then can you pair yourself with someone, if collaboration is something you're interested in,
mm-hmm.
can you pair yourself with someone who has the part that you don't?
Right.
There are very few, although there are some wonderful songwriters, but I think, especially looking at this town, there are very few people who wouldn't benefit from a great collaborator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how do you go about figuring out where your little niche falls?
You know, I think part of it is just sheer force of repetition, and part of it at the end of the day is luck.
Okay.
You know, doing it over and over again, I think you begin to understand, okay, so if you start to look at a thread of songs, and I'm talking about when I moved to town, I'd written 10 songs.
Right.
And now I've written 800. So somewhere in between 10 and 800, you start to understand, okay, this is a thing that I'm pretty comfortable doing. I can reproduce this in writing sessions fairly often. Now, who do I need to be with that can do the thing that I don't do easily?
Right.
So that we can just get together and capture lightning in a bottle. And that, for me, is a big part of the writing process. I tend to write very quickly, and it tends to be a very instinctive thing now. But that's because I spent years agonizing over individual lines. I mean, co-writers and I, as we were sort of coming up together, we'd spend 3 hours trying to figure out a line.
Right.
Make yourself crazy.
Yep.
You know, that's part of it. And I'm glad I did it. And I'm really glad I'm not doing that anymore. So.
Who was it that gave us that idea of, if you're struggling with a line for a long period of time, your problem isn't finding that line, it's the line that you wrote before?
Or before.
Oh, that's great. Right. Great. Sometimes it is the setup line. It's the line. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a perfect observation. I think one of the things that you find the more that you do this is you learn, I don't want to call them tricks because I think that cheapens it. You learn devices, ways of sort of approaching songwriting so that you don't get bogged down.
Right.
You know, if I've learned anything over the years, and these days most of the writing I do is with younger artists mm-hmm. who may have a wonderful vocal talent and maybe even a wonderful melodic gift, but they don't necessarily understand the mechanics of making a song.
Right.
And so if I bring anything to the table, it's that idea that, okay, so you've got the gift, but let me show you how to kind of steer that a little mm-hmm. bit. You know, they may have a Ferrari, they don't know how to drive it yet.
Yeah.
So that's part of the deal. The more you do this, the more you sort of understand the mechanics behind it.
Another Justin Bieber reference. That's wow. two in one show.
Wow.
That's crazy. Can you believe that?
And he plays the drums too.
Coincidence?
Strange.
I don't think so. I don't think I've ever seen you two in the same place at the same time.
Yeah, that's so. You're going to it's out now. Great.
that's what it is. So You Scott mentioned that you've got these great blogs. There's one that I was reading that the don'ts, things not to do as a songwriter, do's and don'ts. Mm. What just to get, for our audience, what are some of the don'ts that you don't do?
Well, it depends on the context, right? So I think some of them were like if you're a songwriter attending a music conference, for example. And I think the illusion that we all hold as songwriters going to a music conference is I'm going to go to this conference. I'm going to meet someone, mm-hmm. I'm going to get discovered, and I will leave a millionaire. That's sort of the, if we are really honest with ourselves, that's what we're all hoping, right? But the reality is that these conferences are full of people who are kind of looking for the same thing. So one of the things that I talk about in these articles is, so don't go in with those sorts of expectations. If you meet somebody who is one of those music industry decision maker types, why don't you set yourself apart instead of launching into a 10-minute spoken word bio? Mm-hmm. About why they need to know who you are. What if you just took a second and asked them what they're working on? People love to be asked,
right?
Like me right now. I love that you guys are asking me these questions. Why not take a moment at a music conference, stop, and ask this music industry professional what they're doing? You'll learn something.
Yeah.
And B, they will remember you as the person that didn't bug them.
Right.
That's really valuable. And the reality is, unless you're only planning on being a songwriter for that weekend, you'll end up meeting these folks again. Don't treat it like this is your one shot to make it all happen.
Right.
Just enjoy the ride. And I think if I've learned anything in doing this for 20 plus years, it's a long ride. If you're lucky, it's a long ride. So why not take your time and enjoy it instead of trying to force the issue every chance you get?
Nice.
And that's real similar to what Frank was just saying, too. It is a long ride, and it isn't something that happens overnight or... You know, if you're really going to do it, you need to be in it for the long haul and be okay making $140 every now and then.
Yeah, yeah.
It's absolutely the truth. And if you're in it just for the money, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
You're in big trouble because that's first of all, if you're fortunate enough to make some of that money, but that's the only thing that was important to you all the way along, does that mean you were totally unhappy for 15 years? That seems like an awful lot of your life to spend being unhappy.
Right.
You know? Fortunately, most musicians, at least on some level, are genuinely moved to do what they do. So they're doing it because it moves them. That's great.
Right, right.
And I understand the sort of desperation that people feel if they've been doing it for a long time and nothing's happened. I think the thing that becomes more clear once you look back is it's not that nothing was happening. It's just that the things that were happening were leading up to a moment that other people would recognize as something happening.
Right.
You know, you're learning the whole time. All of these things that are finally bearing fruit later in a career are based on the foundation that you've been building the whole time. It's just that you can't say to somebody when they ask you, so have you written anything that I've heard? No, but I understand now that if I have an internal rhyme in the second line of a song, it'll actually work better. That's right. Not going to mean anything to anybody, but it's the you know, it's the kind of stuff that you're learning along the way that's super valuable. So,
I love that.
Look at that.
I love
I'm
that.
I'm learning something. So
I know. I feel smarter already.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to ask Cliff what he's working on right now.
Yeah, there you go.
But we're here having a lovely time. You're listening to the Music Row Show. Stick around.
I can take the time to find it. I can wait around till I'm old. I've been holding out when out's not the answer. Roll the tape and wait to rewind it. Celebrate the loss of control. Circle around the truth like some kind of dancer.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
It's a world, the one
That's a tune called Till It's Over, written by our guest this hour, Cliff Goldmacher. We were talking songwriting. He does, if you missed the intro, he does a lot of stuff. He's been at this for a long time. So let me recap.
Cliff Goldmacher.
He does a lot of stuff.
I think I'm changing my bio. Yeah. I really like that.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk hooks.
Okay, then.
A catchy hook can be a great thing, or it can be a distraction.
Ooh.
That's actually true.
Talk about that.
So, you know, it's that classic thing, right, where if a song is a hit on the radio and they play it to the point where it sort of makes people insane, mm-hmm. not good insane,
like the other kind.
So a hook is really valuable because you want people to remember it, but you know what happens when you actually get a hook in your mouth, right? It's unpleasant.
It hurts.
Nice. I mean, you remember it. You definitely remember it. So there's a fine line. I think a hook is supposed to be there so that people have something to hold on to. You've got X amount of time to get them. Most of the time, when it comes to writing a lyric, you've only got, you know, a little bit of time. And most of the time, people are not, unless it's your mother, they're not sitting down to really get into your lyric.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You've just got to figure out a way to grab them when they're doing 19 other things. Mm-hmm. So that's the fine line. You want to grab them, but you mm-hmm. You don't necessarily want to tie your hook to the end of a baseball bat and beat the crap out of people with it. There's sort of a fine line.
So do you mean that simply from a repetition standpoint?
Well, it's repetition, but it's also what are you using as your hook, right? I mean, sometimes a hook can be a really interesting thing, and it can be that sort of aha moment in a song, which is great. But sometimes a hook can be something that maybe is a little too clever for its own good, and that can be a little bit exhausting after a while. There are lots of mistakes you can make. But I would rather err towards the side of making a mistake with a hook that's too memorable, in other words, borderline annoying, than not memorable enough. Because this is art, and art is subjective. And there are some people who will think, I can't stand that, and other people will think, I can't get that out of my head, I love it.
Right.
There's no right or wrong answer with that thing. So somebody, as long as the hook is there, you're doing your job.
But there's also, if you get that great hook, and you, because every now and then you just know, it's like, oh my gosh, that's a killer hook.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a responsibility to make a song around that, too. You can't just rely on just that hook.
Oh, yes. So I have an analogy that I use for the difference between emotion and craft in songwriting.
Okay.
So emotion is just that thing that it's all human. And so you have a hook that maybe you know is going to have an emotional core to it, right?
Right, right.
But if you don't reveal it the right way, in other words, if you don't use the craft, then you're not going to be able to really take advantage of the hook and use it properly. And the analogy I use is I've heard the expression that songwriters are emotional nudists. Okay?
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Bear with me for a second here.
Again, I see what you did there.
See,
bear with you.
Oh, yeah. Good. So if you are a flasher,
uh-huh.
that will actually get you arrested. And that's a song for me that's all emotion and no crap.
I know. Sorry.
Then on the other side, there's, instead of being a flasher, there's a striptease. Mm-hmm. Now, this is something that people actually pay money for.
Go on.
Right? So a striptease is something that is people want to know what's going to happen next.
Uh-huh. Sure.
So that's the craft side of things. Yeah. So it's all in how you reveal that hook and how you set it up and how you keep people interested. So the hook in and of itself, you're right, unless it's properly revealed, not going to get you what you need.
I have no idea what we're talking about,
but I've never been
more interested than I am right now.
I could just see the conversation I'm going to have with my wife later on tonight. Honey, I need to go right at the strip club. I don't know why, but we had this whole conversation on the show. And
you're exactly right. That's exactly what I was recommending. That's perfect.
I think you might have misunderstood his analogy.
I might have.
No, that does make sense. You want to work your way there to the reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
It's not the hook. It's not just the hook. It's how you set it up.
Well, what are some other in one of these tips, the do's and don'ts when it comes to actually crafting a song? What are some of your other do's and don'ts?
My all-time favorite, and this is something that I think as songwriters, when we're writing a song, especially, and this is part songwriting and part production, but there's this tendency to sort of ease your way into your song and make the intro long and luxurious.
Mm-hmm.
And don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
That doesn't happen as much. I noticed that a lot on older songs.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like the intro is like as long as the song is, practically.
Yeah. Those days are gone.
Yeah.
But I do see it on writer's nights, especially people that are new to town and they do this long guitar intro.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just strumming.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I understand why you're doing it, right? Or why we're doing it. It's because, you know, we're feeling the song and we're kind of getting our head right. Right. So the reality is, and here's my favorite moment. I was back behind the stage at a music conference and we were about to go up on a panel. It was a song critique panel.
Yeah.
And one of the judges was sort of an old experienced veteran, and one of them was a younger successful artist but had never done a song critique panel. Mm-hmm. And so the young artist says to the old guy, so, you know, what am I supposed to say? I don't know what to say. And the old guy says, don't worry, if you can't think of anything to say, just tell them to cut their intro in half. And it's true, almost without exception. That's like the first thing that you notice is just remember you're there to get to the point.
Right.
Short intro, set the table a little bit, and then get into telling the story.
Right. Yeah. How about a song?
I'd love to.
You may want to take the headphones off. It's a little easier. You don't get any
duly noted
reverb.
Let me
back.
Get myself situated here.
There we go.
So this is a song I wrote a while back with a friend of mine named Scott Carter. And I won't give away the title because I'll just let it sort of build into the hook. Isn't that what we're talking about?
As long as there's a long intro.
Oh, it's a super long intro.
Nice.
How could I possibly know what it would take to make you look at me? Whether you ebb or you flow, how much sugar to put in your tea? I'd be wasting my time trying to get you to make up your mind. There's no way I can make your heart fall. What I say makes no difference at all. No one told Ella how to swing. It's a chemical thing. But either it is or it ain't. Not that I'd mind if the answer was yes. But I'm not gonna sit here and wait, 'cause you're not a teacher and this ain't a test. I know what I like, but I can't convince a bolt of lightning to strike now. There's no way I can make your heart fall. What I say makes no difference at all. No one told Einstein what to think. It's a chemical thing. If there's chemistry, we'll interact inevitably, but there's no way I can make your heart fall. What I say makes no difference at all. No one told Marilyn when to wink. It's a chemical thing. It's a chemical thing.
Very nice. That's pretty awesome.
Thanks.
So one of the things you talked about in one of your articles that I found kind of interesting, especially it seems to point the difference between West Coast and East Coast and kind of how things are done here, is you discussed discussing the split of a song with a writer before you start writing with them.
Ah, sure.
So talk about that and how that might be different from how things are done here in Nashville.
Well, so, you know, when I sort of came up, the understanding was we were all kind of co-writing. We were all kind of new to it, and we were young.
Right.
So the understanding was just, hey, we're going to split this thing 50-50, and we didn't really talk about it. And that's just sort of the general understanding.
Sure.
And I think when I teach workshops now, and you know, society is becoming a little more litigious and everybody worries about these things. A lot of the questions I get are around, well, should we have a contract that we're signing before we co-write? And, you know, I feel like co-writing and the splits, it's really, when it comes down to it, it's karma, right? Don't worry. Some days you're going to write a little bit more. Some days you write a little bit less. Don't start picking these things apart. Know that if you're both not in the room at the same time, the song doesn't happen. The song does not exist in the world if you're not both there.
Right.
Or if the three of you aren't there.
Right.
Split it evenly and move on.
Right.
Yeah. Some days you're going to carry more of the burden. Some days you're going to carry less. But don't start trying to figure out who wrote 41% of the lyric. Or it just, it's not a good policy.
But isn't it, and we were talking about this on the way in, we were talking on the phone, very interested in this conversation, because it seems what we've heard is on the West Coast, maybe they're a little more splitting those percentages differently. Is that the case?
Oh, you know, I haven't come across that. But again, you know, maybe just it's my experience, because I, you know, a lot of times if that discussion happens, I'll politely say, no. You know, this is the kind of thing where we're just going to come into the room and everything is even splits. So I haven't really come across that.
Right.
But
well, that's good.
Yeah.
But it is. I mean, and we actually, Logan and I were talking about this yesterday about how melody and lyrics are equal.
Oh, yeah.
When you're, if that's the song, then you know, both parts are very important.
Oh, heck yes. Yeah, it's all part of it. And the thing is, you know, even though, as I was saying, my melodies, what I discovered over time was my melodies weren't particularly, they weren't that sort of magic thing that I have found in some of my collaborators. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, that means I'm probably not going to be writing the melody, but that doesn't mean I won't have an opinion here or there, or we won't be steering each other.
Sure, sure.
So it gets a little bit messy. I would never try and start, oh my you gosh. Know, counting words or figuring out who did what.
I can't imagine something that would kill creativity more than that.
Bingo. That's exactly right. My understanding is we're splitting whatever we do. It's going to work out.
Yeah.
So when you're writing a song to pitch, you're mm-hmm. trying to come up with something to pitch. Talk about easy to learn and easy to sing.
Yeah, huge. So one of the things that I think we forget, especially because as songwriters, we're constantly trying to do something that hasn't been done before, right?
Right.
So sometimes we can out-clever ourselves and make something that's so complicated that, yeah, no one's ever done that before. And you know why? It's too complicated. Yeah. So what you have to remember as a writer, especially a writer where you're hoping someone else will record your song, is A, can they learn it? And can they learn it quickly? And is it easy to remember? And not only for the artist that you're hoping will cut the song, but for anybody who will ever listen to this thing, if you're fortunate enough to get it on the radio. Understand that people don't have the kind of time or attention spans to really dig into something crazy complicated. Look, I'm not saying don't write what moves you. Write what moves you.
Sure.
But if you're hoping to have someone else record the song, then keep in mind that there are some criteria that are involved that will make your job easier in terms of getting someone else interested. And part of that is keep it simple enough. That doesn't mean dumb it down. It just means make sure that this is the kind of thing that someone can hear and learn and respond to quickly. Mm-hmm.
And that comes from not only a melodic perspective, but also lyrical perspective, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, my first rule, I was talking to somebody about this recently. My first rule of lyric writing is do no harm. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, make sure that the lyric and the way that it is being sung doesn't distract. At some point, if you're fortunate enough, people will actually want to hear what it is you're saying.
Right.
But if it sounds awkward or is too complicated or is kind of wrapped around itself in an unusual way, without people being able to necessarily explain why, they're not going to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
The very first thing is the lyric just has to feel and sound good being sung.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can tell your story. But those have to go together. This isn't poetry, right? I mean, there are elements of lyric writing that are poetic. But at the end of the day, people don't sing their poems.
Right.
So remember that it has to sing as well as tell whatever story it is you're going to be telling.
And again, we're talking when you're trying to get something that's public consumption, radio friendly, because I love what you said just a minute ago about writing Right, what you feel. And we were talking about that in Ireland, because one of the things that struck us was we heard great songs, and you kind of get caught up here in Nashville. All of a sudden, everything is, you know, is it 3 minutes? Is it catchy? Is it
And 11 seconds, we haven't gotten to the hook yet, you know.
Yeah, and you go somewhere else, and you're like, man, I'm hearing great songs that are just great songs.
And remember that. That's hugely important to remember. You know, I think if it doesn't move you, then what are you doing?
Right.
Right? But above and beyond that, look, you can have songs that move you, but if you're hoping that someone else will record your song, well, then it's not just you anymore.
Right.
You know, there are other factors. There are other things to consider. And hopefully the art is in figuring out how to balance those. Do something that moves you so you don't feel like you're just writing this widget because everybody else is creating the same widget to get it cut. And at the same time, make sure that it's something that is, you know, that works for another artist.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we're coming back with a whole lot more of mentor and songwriting guru Cliff Goldmacher here on The Music Row Show.
Here I am alone again. I'm wishing you would call me, and you'd find a way to charm away what's left of lonely. I'm waiting, contemplating everything but misbehaving and what you're thinking. Heaven knows, and so it goes.
Oh yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with songwriter and songwriting guru Cliff Goldmacher, and that's a tune called "And So It Goes." And I like that.
Thank you.
That's pretty awesome. You said something really interesting. You said that most musicians don't fail because of lack of talent. It's something else. Expand on that.
So talent, especially in a town like this, I sort of feel like talent is the least common denominator.
There's no shortage.
There is no shortage of talent. Talent is not the issue. The issue, generally speaking, is either work ethic or the approach to the work. It's very rarely the lack of talent. So, you know, I've found that most of the time, the people who are successful, I look at these things sort of on a sliding scale, right? You've got talent and you've got work ethic. If you're all talent and no work ethic, it's extremely rare that you're going to have any kind of significant success. If you're all work ethic and no talent, also extremely rare. But everything in between is negotiable.
Right.
So, you know, there's
I like that.
We've seen it all.
I like that.
We'd love to hear one more song. We're going to mic you this time.
Well, thanks. Okay, this should be fun. I wrote this one with a friend of mine up in New York named Brian Jones, and this is also speaking to the issue of what it takes to have a career in songwriting, which is patience. So I figured instead of just talking about patience, I would write a love song to her. I thought that might make sense. Nice. Patience loves to keep me waiting, never shows up early, and takes up all my time. Patience is a dysfunctional relationship, but I'm a glutton for the punishment. I've had my share of faith and hope and charity. I understand the good for me, but they don't mean a thing, 'cause I'm sitting here waiting for patience. Patience is right around the corner, but not the next corner or the corner after that. Patience knows I'll be here till the cows come home. This is one thing that I can't let go. I've had my share of faith and hope and charity. I understand the good for me, but they don't mean a thing, 'cause I'm sitting here waiting for patience. I'd swallow all my pride to hold her in my arms and look into her big brown eyes. Imagine kind of a cool solo here. I've had my share of faith and hope and charity. Those girls don't mean a thing to me, so I'm virtuously sitting here waiting for patience. My patience, sweet patience. Thank you.
Nice.
Thanks.
All right.
Should we take another break?
Let's do it.
All right. One last break. We're going to be back with much more with Cliff Goldmacher. You're listening to the Music Row Show. Stick around. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with songwriter and songwriting guru Cliff Goldmacher, and that's a tune of his called Perfect Combination.
Perfect combination.
And there it is.
Leave your sweet self behind.
I want to wear a fedora right now.
I know. I feel like I should be smoking something or whatever.
Easy.
So we all have songs that we've started that we can't seem to finish. What are your tips for finishing a song that you've been working on forever?
Oh, that's it. I mean, we've all been there, right?
Yeah.
We've got these little sort of orphaned bits of songs that we've kind of... Well, first thing... Don't be afraid to walk away.
Okay.
Walk away for a little while, because sometimes forcing the issue is the last thing you want to do.
Right.
One of the things that I love is actually making, in the room, in the writing room, a very rough recording of the song. I'm talking about like singing into the little recorder on your laptop or on your smartphone. Then stop. Stop playing it for a minute and just listen back. Listen to your song the way an audience member would listen to it, and you would be amazed at how quickly you notice what's working and what's not. As soon as you get out of your own way and step back and listen, it changes everything. So sometimes we get so close to these things, it's really hard to get any perspective. And even the simple act of just listening back to it makes a big difference.
But then we got to listen to our own stuff.
I mean, that is the risk.
I would say, though, if you don't like listening to your own stuff.
Yeah, that's a problem. Huh?
Yeah, probably nobody else will either.
There is that concern, for sure.
And again, we're talking commercial music here, because one of the things I read and was a big lesson I learned, I came to town with one of my 8 songs, and I thought it was just a killer song. It always got a great response. Sometimes people still ask for it, but publishers all said the same thing. There's no artist out there that wants to portray himself as a cheating husband and father. So it's very important, even though, you know, however you might think of that song, you got to remember that people don't want to sing about them being a bad guy.
Well, that's exactly it. It's extremely rare. For example, you write a song like that, you know who you are, you know what you mean.
Right.
Right? But for an artist to imagine themselves in the role of bad guy, it takes a special artist to kind of want to go to that place, and it's extremely rare.
Right.
You don't always have to make an artist look like a great person, but you have to make them look like they're somehow insightful or that they've got some sort of an angle on something.
Right.
Because there are plenty of songs out there that are sort of darker songs.
Sure.
But if you listen to them carefully, I think what you'll notice is the singer of the song has got some sort of perspective or is telling a story in a way that makes them look like they're okay, you know?
Right.
So it's tough to find someone who really wants to come off as a bad guy.
Right. Or find a way to turn it into a third person storytelling kind of thing, so that the singer's not the character.
That's it.
You know, I guess. So I guess one of the things we haven't talked about yet is demos. You've done thousands of these things, and you've got all kinds of tips and tricks of, you know, what to do or not do when you're doing a demo. And of course, demos are near and dear to every songwriter's heart. So
For sure.
So what are your top couple?
Well, here's the number one thing that I would recommend that you do as a songwriter before you go in to demo your song. And I know this is going to sound crazy, but again, we all do this. If you're going in to demo your song, make sure your song is finished.
What?
Right. You would think, okay, well, of course, if you're spending money on this, you're done with the song, right? But I get it, because I made the mistake. We are excited about our songs. We figure, look, it's just one line in the bridge. It's not that big a deal. Let's book the studio. Let's do this thing. Now, from a studio owner's perspective, it is my distinct pleasure to have you pay me to watch your creative process,
right?
Yeah.
That's wonderful for me. But for you, not so much. Writing when you're paying someone to watch you write, not so sure that should be part of your songwriter business plan.
Right.
I like the sound of that. Yeah.
Well, and you know,
take your time. It's all right. You know. Right.
But you know, times have changed, because you know, 30 years ago, the Stones would rent a studio for 2 months and write and record their album right then and there.
And that is, I'll amend my statement. If you are the Rolling Stones, you have my permission to write the song in the studio.
And you'd like to be there.
I would be delighted.
Yeah. And then you're not worried, but you're not at that level. You're probably not worried about, you know, the clock ticking.
Well, that's because the studio was paying. Now, the studios don't do that anymore.
Right.
Those days are long gone.
That's for sure. And the reality of the situation is, I think there are things that we can do as songwriters to sort of make the demo process, which honestly should be a joyful process.
Absolutely.
This is that moment where you're putting that bit of polish on a song that you feel really good about.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the more that you can do in advance to sort of get yourself ready so that on the day you're not worried about finishing the song, you're not worried about that stuff, you can really enjoy the process. I mean, I really firmly believe that the process of turning a rough recording into a demo is, it's especially using the kinds of session musicians and demo singers we've got here in Nashville.
Yeah.
It's a miracle. You know, be present for it, enjoy that process, and the more you can do in advance to sort of be ready, like finishing your song, better off you'll be.
Now, we've talked about educatedsongwriter.com, but you have another website that kind of focuses more on your studios.
That's exactly right. I run a website called NashvilleStudioLive.com. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I call it that is a couple of years back, I had what I refer to as an aha moment, which is I was living in New York at the time. I'd already left Nashville, and I realized that I still missed my session guys and my demo singers, the ones that I was used to working with. And I figured out a way to stream the audio from the session in real time to where I was in that time, New York. The way Nashville Studio Live works is we stream the audio to our clients wherever they are in the world. So we've had clients in Australia, we've had clients in China, all over the place, and they're listening in real time as their song is getting recorded, so that, I mean, you're songwriters, you guys get this. You don't want to just send this thing off and hope for the best. You want to be part of the session, so
right,
you know
right.
how it's being recorded and how the singer is interpreting your lyric.
Right.
So that's what this site provides.
That's amazing.
Again,
yeah,
the website?
NashvilleStudioLive.com.
There. See what I did there?
That was nice.
That's plugging.
You are a pro.
Oh,
you
that
know?
What that was to-
Well, okay, we got a few more minutes, so we got to do this next part good, fast, and cheap.
Mm.
Is that possible?
So the deal is you can pick any two.
Right.
Good, fast, cheap, pick any two. This applies to demos. This applies to anything really in your
plumbers,
music career.
Whatever.
You name it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you've got the money, you can do this thing well, and you can do it in a hurry. If you don't have the money, you can still do it well. Just take a deep breath and know that it's going to take some time. It will still turn out great. You know, at the early in your career as a songwriter, you are long on time and short on funds.
Mm-hmm.
So invest the time and eventually the funds will come. But take your time and do these things properly. It'll be less expensive and it'll still be good.
So you're saying fast and cheap is not the best alternative ever?
Not really.
Not when it comes to songwriting.
Not really.
Easy.
I'm out.
I know.
I'm out.
You're killing me here.
Yeah. Now, you have a book as well, don't you?
I do. I have an ebook called The Songwriter's Guide to Recording Professional Demos. And again, it's a way of sort of helping people not make all of the mistakes that I made along the way when I was first learning how to demo my songs.
And you can get that at cliffgoldmacher.com. I'm NashvilleStudioLive.com.
And EducatedSongwriter.com.
You are just a plethora of song websites.
I think I need a hobby.
Yeah, or a fourth website. To
Maybe
kind of
so.
Put them all together.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about Demo Studio, because again, that's what introduced me to you to begin with.
Wonderful.
Something you talked about that I thought was brilliant was a great demo will not fix a song.
Oh, right. So you know, if you're writing your song and you're thinking to yourself, well, it doesn't quite work now, but I know when that screaming electric guitar comes in, everything's going to be great.
It's going to be awesome then.
Right? The reality is that a song should work at its most basic level. One instrument and a vocal. If your song isn't working there, it doesn't matter how many great musicians or how much stuff you pile on top of it, song's still not working.
Right.
Now, it's a little more distracting in a happy way when you've got great musicians playing all over it, but remember what your competition is. There's a lot of competition out there, and it's not just, although it is important to have a polished recording, the song has to work. And the song is going to work at its most basic level, which leads me to what I think is a really important point, especially for songwriters early on in the game. Even though it is exciting and really fun to put every instrument in the Western musical tradition on your demo.
Yeah.
A good piano or guitar and a good vocal will do the trick. Yeah. I cannot tell you how many times that is all you need to get a cut. Now, there are certain instances where that's not going to work. If you're trying to pitch a song to film and TV and it's a scene in the movie where it's a bar band, guess what? A heartfelt acoustic guitar and vocal is not going to do it.
Right.
But for most instances, and you will get lots of opinions on this, by the way, my experience has been a single instrument and a great vocalist will do the trick. So start there. You can't unspend the money later, but you can always add more on to your guitar, vocal, or piano vocal if the situation warrants.
Yeah, I'd really like to, if somebody in a position of authority, you know, says, I'd love to hear this demoed up, well, then you've got a good reason to go.
That's exactly right. Instead of just trying to spend, because look, you've only got finite amount of dough, so why not build a bigger catalog of professionally recorded songs with less on them?
Right.
There you go. Wow. And another hour has gone by. Look at that.
Look at that. CliffGoldmacher.com.
Thank you both. I really enjoyed it.
EducatedSongwriter.com.
NashvilleStudioLive.com.
There you go.
Nowhere else you need to go, except for maybe TheMusicRowShow.com.
Next week.
That's right. We've got another great show for you next week. We hope you come and join us again.
It's been fun.
We'll see you next week on The Music Row Show.